Good evening, and we begin. So, before I pass out papers, I want to have a quiz session. So, tonight's topic is patrilineal to matrilineal, and there's a big mystery there. But I want you to think about for a moment, what things do you know as a Jew get passed down from which parent? So, for example, what gets passed down from the father?
Kohen Levi.
Okay, so tribal status, we'll call that.
Property.
And this goes to biblical times, right. Actually, so that's a good answer. It certainly is land,
mm-hmm.
And that's tied in with inheritance. So that comes from the father. Okay, how about this one? Whether you're from the house of David or not, which is important because that's the qualification for being the Messiah. Also, whether you are a Hasmonean or not came from the Father. Testimony of relatives. So you're the descendants of the Father cannot testify against you, but from the mother's side they can. It's in the Bible.
Okay.
Pharaoh's brow. Okay. And finally, slave status comes from the father. So, in other words, a slave man that marries a woman, the children become slaves because he's a slave, even if she's not.
So why would any woman ever marry a slave man, then?
Are they released in 7 years?
Yes, they're all released and all that. Okay, now what follows through the woman?
Religious
status is a
Jewishness.
Jewishness. And one other thing which we'll talk about a lot tonight, illegitimacy. No, which is really the wrong word. The right word is mamzerut, right? Everyone knows the word mamzer. So mamzer is an illegitimate child, but it's not a bastard in the Western sense. It means the child born of a forbidden union. Okay, that was the introduction. And now, right to the text. So basically, we're going to see tonight a big mystery. And we will spend time trying to figure out the mystery. And I will tell you the no secret reveal. I'm always a big fan of the reveal. But basically, we started with patrilineal descent, and we wound up with matrilineal descent. And how did we get there? And I won't reveal the answer.
Oh, so the standard, there's like a standard line that we were all told. I guess that's not, that's more complicated than that.
What is the standard line?
There was so much raping and pillaging from the Romans that they didn't know who the mother was, the father was.
Can I tell you, I didn't know that, and you're now the second person to tell me that. And I did uncover that while I prepared for this.
So, I was taught that as a kid in Hebrew school.
I didn't know about the rape part. I knew about paternity is unknown, maternity is known. Was the standard explanation I heard.
But the reason they couldn't presume paternity is because there was so much rape.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also warn you that this gets very complicated, as all the family genealogy type things tend to do. So don't throw rocks at me if something doesn't quite make sense.
Would that even
Okay, so the big source text here is from the tractate Kiddushin, which means marriage, and from the Mishnah. So the Mishnah starts off with four cases, and we'll spend a little time here and explain what the terms mean. So we'll start at A. Whenever there is a Kiddushin and no sin, the offspring follow the father. Okay, so Kiddushin means, in this case, literally a valid betrothal. So in ancient times, the way it worked was a man betrothed a wife, and she stayed at her father's house, and he stayed at his father's house, and they waited a year, and a year to the day of the betrothal, they got married. And they were separate things. So betrothal was what we would now call engagement. And we don't do that anymore, because what they actually do is they combine the betrothal and the marriage into one ceremony, so it's all done. So, and the names for these things morphed over the years too, because the biblical name for betrothal is erusin. And nisuin was marriage, now it's kedushin. So anyway, for our purposes, we'll just say betrothal. So that's betrothal, and what about the no sin part? So the word here is avera, sin. And what it means is basically a legal marriage. No sin means a legal marriage. So, of course, you want to ask, what is not a legal marriage? And that is a marriage of a forbidden relationship. So, these are the things in the Torah that, where the whole long list we read on Yom Kippur, you know, you can't marry your grandmother and your aunt and da-da-da-da-da, incest. It's always called either incest, the Hebrew word is erva, which means sexual impropriety. Okay, so that's the thing. Valid betrothal, legal marriage, the offspring follows the father. What case is this? And each one's going to give a case. When a woman of priestly, Levitical, or Israelite descent, Kohen Levi Yisrael, marries a Kohen Levi Yisrael, what's the status of the child? It follows the father. That's what this is saying. Okay? Case two.
So there's a Kohen can marry in Yisrael? There's no back in those days?
Kohen doesn't have to marry a Kohen.
Okay.
Yeah, Kohen can marry Yisrael.
There was no prohibition back then.
But there's certain people a Kohen can't marry, which you'll see right now. Right. So, case two, whenever there is a kedushin, valid betrothal, and there is a sin, meaning a marriage that is not legal, the offspring follows the more tainted parent. So the Hebrew word here is pagum, tainted, defective, inferior, but not inferior in the English sense, inferior in the legal sense, like major, minor kind of thing.
Well, who would have performed one of these invalid marriages? How would it have happened?
So here's where I have to kind of say I don't know, and marriage was not necessarily the kind of marriage we had. If you go back to biblically, Basically the woman moved in with the man, They were married.
Right.
That was kind of the way it worked. I don't think they had marriage ceremonies like we did now.
How could there be if Kedusha is valid betrothal, how could there be a valid betrothal of a marriage that's not permitted?
Well, it's a sin. It does mean it's not permitted. Because there's a gray area, very much. And here's the examples. What case is this? This is a widow married to a Kohen Gadol. So a Kohen Gadol cannot marry a widow, cannot marry a divorcee, blah, blah, blah. But if he does marry it, I believe the union is still valid, but there's a problem with the children. So that's one example. Oh, a widow married to Kohen Gadol, here it says it for me, a divorcee, or a chalutza. So the chalutza is the case of the levirate marriage, as it's called in the Torah, which is if a man marries a woman and he dies before they have a child, then it's his brother's responsibility to marry the woman, but the woman gets a choice if she doesn't want to marry him. She performs the ceremony called chalutza, which consists of loosening his shoe, and then spitting in front of him, and says, I will not build up my brother's name in the house of Israel, and that's it. So that's what chalitza is.
And then she can't marry a Kohen.
And she's called the Yibum. Right. And that's what it says here, the widow of a childless man released from the obligation of levirate marriage. That's one. No, these are the other cases. These people cannot marry a regular Kohen. Yeah, this case too. A mamzeret. So a mamzeret is a female illegitimate child. Or I should say, again, a female child of a forbidden union. If I say illegitimate, everyone knows what I'm talking about. To an Israelite, so if she's a mamzeret and he's Jewish, if she's Jewish and he's a mamzer, those are all forbidden marriages. Momzer can't marry anyone, except another momzer, which is a whole big issue, which we won't even talk about. Okay, so that's case two. Case three. When there is no kedushin in the present union, so there is no valid marriage here, but the woman could have kedushin with another man. The offspring is a mamzer. What is this case? When there is a union of any of the forbidden relationships in the Torah. So if a Jewish woman could marry a Jewish man, but instead she chooses to marry her son, ew, that is a forbidden relationship, and the child is a mamzer. And the last case, when there is no kedushin possible for the woman at all, the offspring follows her. What's the case? The offspring of a female slave or a Gentile woman. So there's no valid kedushin here because of the fact that it's all about paternity, that these are not people that you can marry. They're not Jews. Legal paternity exists only if there is a potentially valid union. And this is really where it all comes from, which is if the mother cannot legally marry the father, it's a question of paternity. Then the child does not have a legal father, and therefore the child follows the mother. And that's what these cases are. So, to go back to the four cases in a summary, case one is Jewish mother and Jewish father. It follows the child follows the father. Case two is it follows whoever is the more defective parent, if it's a mixed union. In case three of the no valid betrothal case, then it's always a mamzer, whichever way you do it. And in case four is the Gentile mother and the Jewish father, and here it follows the father. Okay? That's right off the bat. That's the opposite of what we think now. Because we think a Jewish father... No, it's the other way around.
But when there's no...
Never mind. It gets confusing. It gets confusing.
Nothing follows her.
Okay. Now, I put in a little piece from the Tosefta here, which we'll just read, because it's just a little clearer to understand. Well, you can see what the dispute is here. When a Gentile or a slave has a child with a Jewish woman, the child is a mamzer. Okay. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda says, in the name of Rabbi Shimon, a mamzer is only produced from a woman with whom the relationship is forbidden and carries a penalty of karet. Karet is the heavenly cutting off by God. So it's kind of the heavenly death penalty, as I like to call it. And they're basically arguing over what produces a mamzer. And a mamzer is a very big deal, just to stop for a second and say, because a mamzer, it's really one of the most tragic things in Jewish life, because through no fault of its own, the child becomes an outcast, cannot be a Jew, cannot marry a Jew, there's no way out of it. Although the rabbis came up with things later. So, and we'll see one of them kind of in a bit.
So, the deceptive is saying that as long as the mother is Jewish,
well, the Seth is disputing. It's right. Giving you two cases.
Right.
But the case number one is what we are saying, because, again, that would be a Gentile man with a Jewish woman. Now, today, that would mean Jewish children.
Right.
The Tosefta says, mom's a child.
Right, but then it goes on to say, Rabbi Shimon says the opposite. He says,
right,
mom is only produced if that relationship was one that was generally forbidden.
But isn't that a forbidden relationship? A Gentile slave?
Well, one that gets the...
Gentile slave with a Jewish woman is a forbidden...
Maybe no, he's just being, it's not forbidden.
Oh, it's not forbidden?
They're not erva, they're not incest kind of marriages. Right, there's no law in the Torah that says don't marry a Gentile. As we will see. We'll
don't
get
tell
there.
That to my kids.
We'll get there. Well, this may be good news in the end. You'll see. Okay, Now comes another Mishnah from Yivamot. Yivamot is Yibum. That's the word about the levirate marriage. There's a tractate there. So we get some more of this. All right, this is kind of setting the background of all of it. So it starts off, a mamzer disqualifies a woman from eating truma and can qualify her as well. How so? What is this thing about eating truma? So truma is tithe food that goes to the temple, and only the Kohanim can eat it and their families. So this is where the Kohanim descendancy comes on. So if you're married to a Kohen through the father, the child is a Kohen. So let's say a man and a woman marry, they're both Jewish, he's a Kohen, they have a daughter, she's a Kohen, she can now eat, she's a Bat Kohen, so she can now eat Truma. You're correct.
Because then it doesn't.
But a Bat Kohen is really still a Kohen.
Right, but her children are not. That's the end of the line.
Okay, so that's exactly what this is talking about. So there's two cases here. If the daughter of a Yisrael marries a Kohen, Jewish woman, Kohen, or a Bat Kohen, the daughter of a Kohen, marries a Yisrael and has a daughter, and that daughter marries a Gentile or a slave, the child of that union is a mamzer. Okay? Jewish mother, Gentile father, is a mamzer. And
which is no different, really. They're just taking it, they're just complicating it.
Yes.
It's not really any different, because at that level, you've still got a Gentile father.
Okay, but it's important, because that again is not what we do today. So
right.
The halakha goes against this, I'll tell you now. But it's actually in a Mishnah that says, Jewish woman, Gentile father, non-Jewish child. Right? And we don't hold by that. That would be matrilineal. Here we're doing patrilineal.
Right.
Case two, this was confusing. Okay? If his maternal grandmother is the daughter of a Yisrael, she is entitled to eat truma. If she is the daughter of a Kohen, she may no longer eat truma. So I work this out.
You lost me.
Yeah. So. Okay. If his mother's...
Who's the he here?
This is the Kohen. This
the
is
Kohen
the,
or the child?
No, it's the child, I think. Let me see what
it's
I wrote
a job
here.
Because it says the daughter up.
His mother's mother was an Israelite's daughter who married a Kohen, and her husband and daughter died. She may still eat truma.
Where does it say husband and daughter died?
I don't even know what I wrote here because it makes no sense. But that comes from the Talmud, from the commentary. But I wrote mamzer, and that makes no sense. Okay. You know what? I can't puzzle it out. I'm just going to give you the summary here. A Jewish man who marries a Gentile woman has a Gentile child. That's what this is saying. A Jewish woman who marries a Gentile man has a mamzer for a child. That's what we have now.
So in neither case is it a Jewish child.
Correct. And that is patrilineal descent, when you think about it.
Right.
It says the child follows the mother, or the father. Yeah, it's going to be a confusing evening. Okay, now comes the smoking gun. That's why there's a line there. So now there's a fascinating discussion in the Talmud, and this is where we turn the corner. So, nothing on my sleeve, watch what goes on. And there's some really amusing stuff in here, too. Said Rabbi Bar Bar Chana, said Rabbi Yochanan. Everyone agrees the child of a Gentile father and a Jewish mother is a mamzer. Okay, that's patrilineal descent. That's what we've had up till now. Rav Acha, governor of the castle, and Rav Tanchum bar Rav Chia from Kfar Akko redeemed captive women. So that was a business in those days. We talked about this in the past, where Jews were kidnapped and ransomed, and there's always a fear that when they kidnapped women, that the women would have intercourse with Gentile captors. And, for example, if that woman was married to a Kohen, she would have to divorce when she got back. And it was all a big question. So here we have this case of the captive women, and one of them was impregnated by a Gentile. It happened. Rav Ami, who said to them, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Chanina all say, the child of a Gentile father and a Jewish mother is a mamzer. So that's the status quo. That's the establishment mentality. Here we go. Says Rabbi Yosef, is it a great trick to mention many names? In other words, you don't impress me by citing all of these bigwigs. Rav and Shmuel, I can do what you
so,
can do.
So now we come more names.
Rav and Shmuel and Bavel, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, and Bar Kapara in Eretz Yisrael, all say the child of a Gentile father and a Jewish mother is kasher. Okay? That's the opposite now. So what does kasher mean? I mean, it literally kosher. Means fit. That's what kosher means, by the way. It means the child is Jewish.
Mm-hmm. But is a mamzer... A mamzer is disqualified from certain things, but is a mamzer not Jewish? That's, I guess, is confusing me a little bit.
I would say a mamzer is still Jewish.
There's a lot of things they can't do in Jewish law.
Right.
They're not fully Jewish.
Yeah.
Like a provisional license.
They can only drive after 9 o'clock with two people in the car. I would guess a mamzer still has an obligation, like to take a to sit in a sukkah or to have a matzah.
Yom Kippur.
It's just the
like
the,
it can't be called.
And I may be wrong on that. I don't know.
My point is that if a Gentile marries a Jewish, if a Gentile father and a Jewish mother, the child is a mamzer.
Right.
But it's not a Gentile, so it's still to some degree following matrilineal descent because of the Jewishness. They're just disqualified from being. Certain aspects of Judaism.
Yeah, and unfortunately I'm going to have to give you a big I don't know, okay. Because I'm not sure on that, but it's okay. A very good point. Okay. So we have a reversal here. Rav also ruled, this is great, the next two paragraphs, that's why I stuck them in. Rav also ruled permissively. A man came to Rav and asked, what is the status of the child of a Gentile father and a Jewish mother? We would say Jewish. He said to him, the child is kasher, he's okay. He said to him, okay then, let me marry your daughter. I will not. Said Shimi ben Barchia to Rav, as the saying goes, camels in Medea can dance in a tiny space. What this basically means is, you know, you brought him home, you're going to feed him. You know, you're legislating... But you're not willing to follow your own legislation. I just think this is a great phrase. Okay, so that's his accusation to Rob. You're being a hypocrite. Here is the space, here is the camel, here is Medea, and yet no dancing. He said to him, Rob is saying back now, even if he were like Yehoshua ben Nun, right, Joshua in the Bible, I would not give him my daughter. He says to Rob, if he were like Yehoshua ben Nun, someone else would marry him. In this case, in other words, he'd be a catch. In this case, if your daughter doesn't marry him, no one will. In other words, since you're not putting your hechsher, your stamp of approval on this man, no one's going to marry him. Everyone will see that. The son of the Gentile would not leave. Rav looked at him and he died. Which is just a great rabbinic resolution of all issues. And now we're going to go back to the mamzer and slayer. So that, I think that, I just love the camel example here. Rav Yehuda also ruled permissively. By the way, permissively doesn't mean the Minglish sense of liberal, in a sense. Permissively means he ruled it was okay. A similar case came to Rav Yehuda. He said, what do? Go disappear or marry your own kind, which means another child of a Gentile father and a Jewish mother. When a similar case came to Rava, he said, go to a place where you are unknown or marry someone in a similar position. So, this is the thing I was going to say earlier about one of the things about the mamzer, where you go to a town where nobody knows you and you kind of start fresh. It's one of the things you can do. At any rate, the whole point is, we've now switched from patrilineal to matrilineal, right? At least some people do. And that's what the halakha is. So this has happened. So does everyone get that? Mm-hmm. We've now gone from here to there.
But there's no explanation for why.
So there's no explanation for why. So, and once again, I miscredit my source. A lot of this comes from an article by a man named Shai Cohen, who's a rabbi who teaches at Harvard. So he starts presenting a bunch of, why did this happen? Let's look at why it didn't happen, or what reasons, where did this come from? And he's got a bunch of things. So, number one, it's not in the Bible. And to prove that, I put a number of sources in here about Jewish men marrying non-Jewish women.
Well, there wasn't really any marriage in the...
And there really wasn't any Jewish back then.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Right. And someone says that somewhere, by the way, which we'll see. Yeah, you'll see coming up. So, here's the first case. Judah marries a Canaanite, right? And we're all Jews from Judah. So this is our ancestor. Joseph marries Asnath, the Egyptian. Moses marries Zipporah, who is a Midianite, who's the daughter of a Midianite priest. Now, lest you think that this is all before the giving of the Torah, King David marries many women, but he marries a Philistine. And Solomon marries everyone. So, clearly, this is not a biblical practice. A biblical practice is the father, Jewish man, marries a non-Jewish woman, children are all Jewish.
Don't the rabbis of the Talmud try to get around it by saying that all these women converted, or because they don't want to leave it out, like that someone as great as King David will marry a lot of...
They do, but not very successfully. And since you mentioned that, let's look at that example. So this is a very famous example here in Leviticus. The son of an Israelite woman, whose father was an Egyptian, okay, Jewish woman, Gentile father, went out among the people of Israel. And this son of the Israelite woman and a man of Israel strove together. They fought in the camp. What's important here? Man of Israel is obviously a Jew. But the son, the product of that union, is not called a Jew. He's called son of an Israelite woman, meaning he's a Gentile. Jewish woman, non-Jewish father, Gentile son. And Ramban makes that exact comment following. The meaning of the son of the Israelite woman is that the Gentile father and the Jewish mother produce offspring that is not Israelite, which is really more correct than saying Jewish, because they were Israelites then, not Jews.
So we're back to patrilineal.
Well, no, this is all biblical. Okay. I'm just trying to say, in the biblical world, we don't find any matrilineal thing. And if you turn the page, the Sifra, this, the Midrash on this, I just put this in because, Lawrence, you mentioned this. You're always getting ahead of me. Even though there were no mamzerim at that time, why? Because the Torah hadn't been given. He was like a mamzer. And the verse goes on in the midst of the children of Israel, and this is where the rabbis say, that means he converted. That's why they put it in. Okay. Now, here is a place where the rabbis derive matrilineal descent from the Torah. And it's from Deuteronomy. You shall not marry with them. You shall not give your daughter to his son, and you shall not take his daughter for your son. For he will turn away your son from the following me, and they will worship the gods of others, and the wrath of the Lord will be kindled against you, and he will quickly destroy you. Okay, so what Rashi makes a comment on this verse, right? And it's a lot of he's and who's and his sons and so on. So what, I'll just read this through. The heathen son, if he marries your daughter, will turn away your grandson, whom your daughter will bear to him, from following me.
Right.
So in other words, Jewish woman marries non-Jewish man, the son is going to be non-Jewish. This teaches us your daughter's son, born of heathen man, is called your son. But your son's son, this is now the Jewish son with the non-Jewish woman, is not called your son, but her son. Matrilineal. For scripture says, do not give your daughter to his son, and do not take his daughter for your son. And follows with, he will turn away your son. However, referring to do not take his daughter, it does not say, for she will turn away for your son, because he is considered her son, not your son. So this is matrilineal.
So Rashi takes this statement, which on the face of it says, nobody should be intermarried, we don't care who and who, you know, who's who,
right.
that it shouldn't happen at all, and interesting, and he twists it into something defining matrilineal descent.
Yes, exactly. And as I said before, here's the thing. In those days, again, if a Jewish woman married a Gentile man, she typically went to his house, lived with his family and his people, and basically disappeared from the Jewish people. That's just the way things worked. So that's why you would think there's no matrilineal, and this is kind of fishy. Okay, so that's all of that is in the Bible. It's patrilineal, basically, with this kind of exception. Okay, so it's not the Bible, part two. It's not Ezra. So, just as an aside, there's kind of a whole school of thought of Ezra is the person who comes back from the Babylonian exile, the destruction of the first temple, around 500 BCE. Ezra and Nehemiah, and they start rebuilding the temple, and scholarly, and even in rabbinic tradition, Ezra is the guy who saves Judaism. Because when the theory is that when everyone goes to Babylon, they lose their Jewishness, Ezra comes back and he discovers a scroll in the temple, which is thought to be the book of Deuteronomy. And he assembles the people and he reads the scroll and he rededicates it and says, and then he expels all the non-Jewish women and children, which is what we're going to read. So he's considered the savior of Judaism. So, the verse from Ezra. And now let us make a covenant with our God to cast out all the wives and all their offspring by the counsel of the Lord, and those who hasten to perform the commandment of our God, and according to the law it shall be done.
That's pretty cruel, actually.
Yes.
You know, you compare it to today's, you know, the discussion of immigration law today. And everybody fighting, like, don't separate families, don't...
Yeah, but, you know, it points out it's all a paternity thing. I mean,
you know, but
paternity slash maternity thing.
I understand it on that level, but sort of it just jumps out at me, but that's really cruel.
There's a lot of hard things in the Bible.
Yeah, and in this case, it was to repurify.
You know, I understand that. It's just...
So scholars will make the argument that Ezra is introducing matrilineal descent because he's expelling all the foreign wives who therefore have foreign children, so he's getting rid of all the non-Jews. Okay, so A, this may be true. No one knows. And scholars, as opposed to rabbis now, came up with a list of reasons why they don't think this is true. And they're all kind of weak, to be honest, but this is the article. So he says, number one, Ezra may not have had authority to expel the men, only the women.
You mean the non-Jewish men?
Yes, the foreign men. Number two, as I just said, the Torah didn't generally care about the marriages of Jewish women to non-Jewish men. Number three, this may have been about citizenship, not about marriage. And he may have wanted to prove that to be a citizen of the new Jewish state, you needed Jewish parents to be there. It's another idea. And finally, if this is probably the best argument of the bunch, if Ezra had really decided on matrilineal descent, then we would have seen that from that point onward, meaning the prophets and the first temple period and all that, and there's no text that follows up with any kind of matrilineal descent from this, after this. So Ezra is dismissed. It's not Ezra. Number three, it's not rape. Okay, so the theory goes that in the wake of the Roman Wars of 66 to 70, destruction of the Second Temple, and 132 to 135, which is the Bar Kokhba revolt, when many Roman soldiers would have raped Jewish women. And thus the rabbis, now we're into the Mishnaic period, right, 0 to 200, when they were making these laws, the rabbis may have pitied the Jewish women who were all pregnant with Roman kids and declared that their children were Jewish. So this is what Michelle learned in Hebrew school. I did not learn that in Hebrew school.
Not that reason. Not that they had pity on the Jewish women, but that you knew, what I was taught is that the reason it passed through the mother was that you knew who the mother was.
Okay, so then that's the next explanation.
But okay, that's what I was taught.
But you also had the rape by Romans.
Because there was so much rape.
Okay.
Because there was so much rape, you could be sure who you always knew who a mother was.
Right.
But because there was so much rape, even if a woman was married, you couldn't be sure that it was his seed.
Okay, so it's a conflation of those two. So what's the argument against this? The argument is we've learned that the offspring of a Jewish woman and a Gentile man is a mamzer. And a mamzer is a little bit better status than a Gentile. Right? Because a Gentile can still convert, but a mamzer cannot. So that's a reason that argues against this, that they would have needed to do this. Right? The argument again is the woman would have had the child, so she just would have converted the child and it would have been Jewish. Also, there's no need to declare the child of a Jewish father and a Gentile mother a Gentile to prevent because the argument was that now the rabbis wanted to prevent intermarriage. That was the purpose of these paternity-maternity laws. And the professor goes on to say that wasn't an operative thing because in first century Judea, there was no intermarriage, right? It would be like colonial citizens marrying British soldiers, right? They were the enemy and there was no friendly relations between them. So that would not have been a concern. You know, in the biblical period, yeah, they were living with Amorites and Gibeonites and this and thatites. There was lots of that going on. But by this period, there were Jews living in Judea, and that was pretty much it. Okay. The last what it's not reason, which is the uncertainty of paternity, which has a nice ring to it. So the argument is, we don't always know who the mother is, but we don't know who the father is.
That's what I was taught.
That's what the nurse said to me in the hospital, that signing the birth certificate.
Okay, so arguments against that. Rabbis restricted matrilineal descent for the prevention of intermarriage. But so they did do that. I mean, that is true. But that doesn't mean the paternity was unknown in those cases. You get that? I mean, it doesn't seem to matter whether they knew the paternity or not. It was still against the rule. So that doesn't seem to be a valid reason. Lawrence furrowing his brow, which always makes me nervous.
No, I'm just trying to... I mean, things can still be... You always find examples of things where it doesn't fit, but that can still be the principal reason. I mean, this could...
Yes, that's true. And believe me, these arguments are developed, you know, over paragraphs, and I'm putting them in sentences. And I can't tell you they always made sense to me either. Right. Some of these I puzzled over. Okay, second argument. There are cases in the Talmud where the child inherits the status of the father, in other words, becomes a Kohen, even though the parents aren't married. So it's another argument against paternity in this case. Now finally, in this argument against paternity then, there's also a suggestion that the mother-child relationship is the closest relationship in the world. And therefore, the mother would rule in those issues of religious.
I've heard that mentioned too.
But, and this is a jarring point, no legal system in the world recognized mother's rights until the 19th century.
Right. Mm.
So apparently that was not a big thing. That doesn't mean the Jews didn't recognize it. Okay. So now we come to what are the possible reasons, and I have three to present to you. And the bottom line answer is none of them are really all that compelling. So at the end it stays a mystery. So the first solution, and the first solution is a more scholarly solution. It's not on the sheet. But it is that rabbinic law was based on Roman law. So Roman law, a child is a legal heir in the custody of the father only if the father and the mother are legally married. If there is no legal marriage between the two, then the child goes with the mother. Okay, and there's all kinds of Latin terms for this, which I'm going to spare you. So what's proof that of this, that the rabbis took the Roman law and adopted it as Jewish law? The proofs are that when you compare the Roman laws, they're very similar to the rabbinic law. The phraseology is the same, the ideas are the same, and that it's a very economical principle because it's a simple principle that covers all the cases. Legal marriage, father, not legal marriage, mother. And the two were working at the same time. Now, nobody knows how, this implies a lot of things, that the rabbis were studying Roman law and they knew it and they incorporated it into their law. Nobody knows that this took place. There's no documents they dug up with the Latin on the top and the Hebrew on the bottom or anything. So it's a typical academic proof by academic textual logic. Okay, that's number one. Number two is based on a Jewish principle of Kilayim. So Kilayim is in the Bible, and it's also a tractate in the Talmud, and the word Kilayim means mixtures. So let's look at a text about mixtures, and that's the Leviticus text here. God is saying, "You shall keep my statutes. You shall not let your cattle mate with other kinds of animals, diverse kind. You shall not sow your field with two kinds of seeds, nor shall come upon you a garment of two kinds of stuff mingled together, linen and wool, shatnez." The Torah is very big on forbidden mixtures. It's in preventing them. So here we have preventing seeds, preventing animals mating, preventing linen and wool. They also prevent grafting different kinds of tree branches together. They are fascinated with hermaphrodites, actually, all through the Torah. It's very trendy now. I don't know how they would have ruled on it. But whenever they pass laws, they would always say, there were two kinds of special people, the androgynos and the tumtum. And the androgynos had no sexual identity, and the tumtum had both sexual identities. So they'd say, like, you know, a man is to put on tefillin, a woman does not. What does the tumtum do? And it goes on and on like that. But they were clearly interested in that. There were a lot of half-Jewish peoples in those days, too. Samaritans we know about. Earlier here I took it out, but they're Gibeonites, which was a people who were descendants of the Amorites, who were descendants of Esau, and they had tricked the Jews into signing a peace treaty, and the Jews, and then they found out that they were not sincere in the peace treaty, and so they rely on the fact that Jews would no longer kill them anymore, because even though it was a false treaty, so the Jews cursed them to be, you've probably heard the term, hewers of wood and drawers of water. So they were these kind of strange in-between caste. And finally, even land, right? The rabbis are fascinated between things you do in Israel and things you do outside of Israel, and what if you live here but you have a house here, and so on. So I'm making the case for the mixtures. But here's the thing. The Torah talks about these mixtures. What do you do with the offspring of a mixture? Right? It doesn't say, it says don't mate two different animals, for example. But what if you do, and you have an animal? Right? It's very analogous now to the baby story. You have two parents who are in different legal statuses, and you mate them. What's child? So there's a Mishnah in Kilayim. Rabbi Judah said, all mules are born from mares. Mules, by the way, are another thing that rabbis are fascinated with. It's the offspring of a horse and a donkey. Notwithstanding that their sires were asses and are permitted one with another. Likewise, a mule born from a she-ass, notwithstanding that their sires were horses, are permitted with one another. But mules born from mares with mules born from she-asses are prohibited from one another. So if you substitute mares, horses, and asses for men and women, and I'm not saying either way which it is, what this text is saying, if you mate, let's say, a male horse with a female donkey, you get a mule always. I know, it always confuses me. Whereas if you mate a female horse with a male donkey, male mule, I'm really killing you. Anyway, you get the same animal, but the parentage is reversed.
Right.
And what he's telling you in this Mishnah is one of them is okay and one of them is not. Right?
And all mules are sterile.
Right, they're both mules in the first generation, but the question is whether that they can mate. So
mules are sterile.
They're not supposed to mate, but what if they do mate, what's the status of the offspring?
But they can't mate. Cause they're
no, horses and donkeys can mate.
Mm-hmm.
But they do get it. Anyway, if you read this, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that the status of the mule follows the mother. So if it comes from a horse, it's one thing. If it comes from a donkey, it's the other thing.
It says, all mules from mares, even if their sires are donkeys, so that's a female horse and a male donkey.
Right.
Are mules, and they're permitted one with another.
So the mules can all mate with each other.
The mother's a donkey, and the fathers of horses are also permitted with one another. The mules born from mares and mules born from donkeys
are not
permitted with one another.
Yeah. She-ass is always a great term. Anyway, so Kilayim. So what Professor Cohen is arguing here is that the switch came about from paternal to patrilineal to matrilineal because of the rabbi's understanding of mixtures. That's what drives the whole argument. And in that case, the end result is the mixture follows the mother based on these and Kilayim. And I'm sure there's much more to it, but obviously it would make your head spin to go through that. Finally, the last explanation, and this, there was a paper who was commenting on Professor Cohen's paper, a woman, and she came up with a third theory, which she calls Chesed. And God knows how many other theories are out there. So, in a very quick nutshell, first we go to Pirkei Avot. Shimon the Righteous was among the last surviving members of the Great Assembly, and he would say the world stands on three things: Torah, service of God, and deeds of kindness, which is chesed.
What does that got to do with...
Good question.
...anything that we're talking
Okay. about? Here's why. Because after the temple was destroyed, we lost the sacrificial system. What came to replace it? Deeds of loving kindness. What's a deed of loving kindness? Charity, for example. Mr. Kiwanis knows all about these things. So all these guys did. Who does deeds of loving kindness? Women. Women are more spiritual than men. That's the next quote here, where it's from the book of 2 Kings. It talks about Kulda the prophetess. Rashi says, our rabbi said a woman is more merciful than a man. And I had a whole bunch of them and I cut them out, but there's, you know, women are more sensitive to guests, women are more spiritual, da-da-da-da-da. So, the argument is that women are more spiritual, and therefore the woman is the one passing on the spirituality to the child. That's her argument. And so she writes her own paper, and again, I'm giving you the one sentence. So the basic answer to her is the destruction of the temple caused the change. It's not a bad theory. Okay, finally, this is in conclusion. So I have two halachot from the Shulchan Aruch. Right, the child of a female slave or a Gentile woman follows their status, irrespective of whether the father is tainted or not. And if a Gentile or a slave has a child with a Jewish woman, whether she is unmarried or married, the child is a Jew. But a tainted Jew, so he can't marry a Kohen. She can't marry a Kohen. Right, and that's the halakha we follow today.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, I'll leave this for you to read for yourself, but it's fascinating responsa from Rabbi Benzion Uziel, who was chief rabbi of Palestine in the 30s, and this could have been written today, and it goes right back to what Michelle said about, you know, I have sons, don't tell them they don't have to marry, whatever. And what he really says is, the child of a Jewish man and a non-Jewish woman is too precious to lose to the people of Israel. And I'm fascinated by it because I've never heard any rabbi say that ever. And this is only, you know, two generations ago. So, conclusion. We went from patrilineal to matrilineal. It happened sometime in the Mishnaic period, sometime in the first century or two of the Common Era. And we really don't know why. There's no particular driver. It doesn't seem to be intermarriage. It doesn't seem to be conversion. You're all free to write a paper and decide what it is.
But the response says he still has to convert, though. So it's not complete.
Yes.
It's not complete. He's not accepting patrilineal descent.
No.
He's just saying we shouldn't throw this person
shouldn't
out.
Shouldn't push it right away.
No. You're right.
Jewish, non-Jewish mother.
And I wanted to add to this. I looked it up once and I forgot to look it up for this. People always say, well, Reform Movement, it's okay. I do want to point out, I've read the Reform Movement's response on this, and it's not just okay. They say that there must be a commitment to Jewish education for so many years and living like a Jew and so on. So it's not a magic wand. Either one works. So it's that's like a step after this, but it's not all that different from this.
Right.
They're just saying, no, we need to have a formal conversion.
They say that.
Right.
And yeah, he's saying there's got to be a formal conversion.
Right. Whereas someone who was born of no Jewish faith whatsoever, neither the father or the mother are Jewish, in the formal things have a conversion.
Yes. Absolutely.
Still making a distinction.
It's just the child of one of a Jewish parent. The one Jewish parent is given Jewish status. Which I used to think was off the wall, but now having read that, I'm just surprised at it.
There's one reason when Rabbi Eisenhower said that the Jews would go that way. He's pretty emphatic about it.
Which surprises me a lot. So I expect that to definitely be the next bold new frontier for the conservative movement.
That will allow